Blog Talk Radio.
Commercial. It's commercial.
Hi, everyone. This is Justine Rutolo, also known as Miss ADD. Welcome to the Miss ADD Hour. Last week, we spent an hour talking about mindfulness in relation to ADD. I had some questions that people sent in, and they were powerful questions. And this week, we're going to be doing meditation and how it relates to ADD. And who I have with me today is a really good friend of mine who I went to graduate school with. And he practices in the West Los Angeles area, and his name is Lee Konecki. So you want to introduce, say hi, introduce yourself.
Oh, hey, my name's Lee, and I am the friend of Justine.
Meditation expert. Okay, so at this week's group that I run on Wednesday nights, my adult group in Torrance, California, I told you about it last week, and it's located at the Center for Learning Unlimited. We meet every Wednesday night from 7:30 to 9. I sent around some questions for everybody and some prompts so that people could ask questions of Lee today in case we weren't getting any phone calls. And so I think we do have some questions that Lee can answer for us.
All right. I guess where I'll start, you know, I'm having a little technical difficulty in my ear, but it will be good. Right. One of the first things I usually talk about is this analogy to give people a reference point. A lot during meditation retreats is that the sky and cloud analogy, that you're the sky, always blue, always clear. It's behind everything, and it's always loving and lovable, and what we'll learn are qualities of love and kindness. And here's the thing, that blue sky is where inspiration comes, creativity, aha. But the problem is for most of us is the clouds of life come. They are your belief systems, your assumptions, conditioning of the past. And what happens with the mind is when it shows up, we look at the cloud and we go, I'm that. And they cling to it, try to fix it and get rid of it. And they cling to all the emotions that the clouds bring up, and they forget who they really are is the sky. It's always behind everything. So I'm just going to leave you with that analogy so you can reference it, and I'll come back to it time to got time with this hour.
Okay, and I think that one of the things I wanted to add in about that is we spoke a little bit last week in terms of mindfulness, and I used the analogy of balloons, where if you had to carry around 30 balloons all day and pull them through doorways and shove them in your car, the balloons are thoughts. And I think that in terms of ADD, when we think about mindfulness and meditation, what I think is important is that if we recognize that when we're able to just notice these thoughts, just notice these feelings, these emotions during the day, and not engage with them, connect with them, then our ability to focus really increases. And for myself, it turned out that with all the work that I was able to do, I was able to get off medication. So I'm going to turn it back over to Lee now.
So what I thought I'd start is a question you hear all the time with people who have been meditating for a while and new people is, what exactly is mindfulness meditation? And I thought the way to begin is talk about what it is, what it's not, and also what is the goal specifically of mindfulness meditation. So let's talk about what it is. And I'll try to, you know, customize it for ADD, ADHD population. You know, one way you can see it is it's a training in awareness, but it's also put in awareness is also attention. So that's really what it is. But it actually goes deeper than that at one point. Because let's start with that the mind has two properties. This is what all human beings' minds do. The first property is that it needs to focus on something. That's what it does. It's unconscious. Where you look, you focus on something. And then what it does immediately, again, most of it unconscious, is that it ascribes meaning to whatever it focuses on. And this is really important because what a lot of cognitive research will talk about is about 95% of what we look at and ascribe is repetitive. 70% of that 95 is negative. So then we come into mindfulness because it's really helping us to regulate that 95 repetitive, 70% negative. So what mindfulness does is it's a specific type of awareness. And it's a phrase you'll hear in any type of retreat. The awareness that you bring and that you train is it's non-judgmental, judgmental, it's compassionate. They call it qualities of love and kindness. Now, one of the things it's really important to talk about is what it's not. There's many types of meditation, and many types of meditation have specific goals. Some of the goals that some teachers will talk about is that they're trying to give you peace. They're trying to get you to happiness. They're trying to give you to nirvana and enlightenment. And these are all great things. But according to mindfulness, they're only byproducts. And if you make them part of the grasping, you're ultimately going to be upset and have all these frustrations. So the ultimate goal in mindfulness meditation is it doesn't matter what shows up in the mind or in your physical everyday experience. What you train is, I will look at it kindly. I will hold it kindly. And doing that, your reactivity to it changes.
Okay. So I guess I'm going to ask Lee a question now, too, because one of the things about ADD is many people call it a disability of regulation. So in our population, it's difficult to regulate our emotions. Now, mindfulness. And I do more of the mindfulness than meditation for me. I have been able to really regulate my emotions. And much of that is by not engaging with my thoughts and also releasing a lot of my blocked energies from the past. So when my stuff, as I like to call it, gets hit, somebody does something that upsets me, I'm really able to sit with it and not have to automatically go way up and engage at that moment. I can take that time. So could you speak a little bit about, specific to meditation, how that's going to help us with regulating our emotions?
Absolutely. And this is one thing, if you're listening, you can, it's kind of like a experiential type of thing. Make a fist with your hand, but now put the thumb inside the fist. This actually represents, in a very basic structure, your brain. Now, the part of the palm of the brain is what we now know as the reptilian mammalian brain. And it's where a lot of the conditioning is. It's where a lot of the primal drives are. Now, if you take the part where the fingers are and the exterior part, that's the cortex. That's where the critical thinking is, skills. And what's really important in this part is that if you take the index finger and the ring finger and the middle finger, those are the really important parts of the cortex that are responsible for decision making, goal setting, and actually attention. These are the things that we really need to have emotional wellness in as parts of the brain. Now, that thumb part that is in the closed fist, that's actually the amygdala tract. Now, the amygdala tract is probably one of the most studied things when it comes to meditation and then help and how it helps people, because the amygdala tract is your fight or flight. And when it gets overstimulated, what happens is that amygdala tract triggers part of the cortex. You don't need to know that's called the ACC. The ACC is one most responsible for ability to have attention. Actually, ability to have goal-directed behavior. So when we what they discovered is that thumb inside the palm actually changes. And because that thumb changes, that thumb actually hits all parts of the brain, specifically those areas that focus on attention and goal-directed behavior.
Okay. I that's extremely helpful. I guess another question, and I know we have questions from the group, but for myself, this is something that I hear a lot from people that talk to me about fear. We have a lot of us unblock the fear, release the fear, so that our creative mind, which, I mean, there wouldn't be a Hollywood without ADD people. We're extremely creative. Can you help us with that?
Sure. You know, fear is a very interesting thing because fear is actually what the mind does with the moment. And if you really look at what is occurring in the moment, it just is. But the problem is your mind, based on your conditioning, based on your past, wants it to be something else. And the moment it wants to be something else, forms of fear show up. That's actually that thumb, the part of the amygdala. It's overstimulated, and most of it's based on the past. So what meditation has us do is, can you just be with that with compassion? And a lot of the practice, without using any lingo or any technical jargon, is simply stay with it. You stay with it peacefully, and that thumb area where the fear is, actually as the call comes down.
Great. Thank you. You know what? We have a caller, so let me pick up the call. Hi, welcome to the Miss ADD Hour. Who am I speaking with?
Hi, Justine. This is Barbara. Sorry I called in late.
Hi, Barbara. That's okay. How are you?
Wonderful. I'm glad I found your phone number. It took that long to dig it up.
Great. So listen, do you have a question for Lee or for myself today?
Nope, I'm just listening in.
Okay, great. Okay, well, we're going to continue on then with the questions that we got from the group the other night. Barbara is a member of our group. So just stay online, Barbara, and listen to us, okay?
Thank you.
All right. Okay, so we had some questions from the group the other night that I forwarded on to Lee so that he could do some work with them before we met today. So would you like to go through them?
Oh, sure. I think some have been answered. But one thing I would like also to talk about outside of the neurological and chemical benefits to meditation that we've touched upon is really the relational aspect. Because what mindfulness has you do is, and it's really specific to mindfulness because it's your relationship to your thoughts that they have you train with. And they really hold the philosophy that the relationship you have with your thoughts will be and are your relationship to yourself, others in the world. And ultimately, you do everything kindly. And I always tell people when I do any type of seminar or talk, if there's one thing that you need to remember today after all the other jargon that I may throw out, is the principle behind mindful meditation. And also in your waking moments, in the mindful practice that I know Justine teaches with the group, is you do everything kindly. Whatever shows up in the mind, whoever you encounter, whatever emotion comes up, you greet it kindly. You befriend it. So I thought I'd talk about some of the relational things because it's really important, and maybe Justine can jump in when she wants, because some of these are directly related to people who have ADHD or ADD. You know, one of the big things they talk about specifically to mindfulness, and one of the big female Buddhist monks, Pema Chodron, she's actually used it as her trademark mantra, is it trains you to not run away. You know, when discomfort hits, it's such a trigger for all society, not people with just ADD or ADHD, is to run away. They bolt. I call psychological runaways. And, you know, I'm sure there's things that you can think about how you run away. You know, it could be food. It could be drinking. It could be sex, the big addiction. But there's so many other ways that we run away. And mindfulness really has you learn to stay with discomfort, because they really believe if you can stay with the discomfort, ultimately, discomfort is a problem. You know, one story I can leave you with that, or not leave you with, I'm not going yet.
Thank God.
Is that Pema Chodron has been asked by people at a retreat, and she's been doing this for, you know, over 30 years. What's the difference between your meditation today than when you first started? And she says, great question. When I first started, I would sit, and this is my meditation. I don't want to sit. My mind is crazy. I want to get out of here. This sucks. Okay, she's not going to say it sucks, but I am. And then she says, after 30-plus years of practice, this is how my meditation goes. I don't want to sit. My mind is crazy. I want to get out of here. It sucks. Only difference then is she said, mindfulness. You're not going to change thoughts because you can't stop thought. Ultimately, it's if you can be thought kindly and show up, and the frequency, they fall away. And that's one of the big important. The paradox is if we be with it kindly, the frequency and intensity of what.
If I could jump in for a minute. One of the things about our population, the ADD population, is a defensive stance because most of our childhood, our adolescent years, negative things that were thrown at us, you're a little stupid, lazy, yep, procrastinator, all those things. So it can be very difficult, I think, for us to approach our life sometimes in what you say, a kind way. Even though this is something I talk a lot about Wednesday night, I see when talking about it, like, you know, assertive and kind communication, that many of the people are struggling with this. Mm-hmm. So maybe you can just give us a little bit more help to get a better listening. When things come up about other people in our head that immediately went to the negative place.
Sure. You know, I'll give you again the philosophy and structure the time term of trust, because I can talk to you about how to work through the shame, but then you're going to need some type of experiential exercise to get a sense of it. But Justine's absolutely right, because at the core of Eastern thought when it comes to conditioning, and they actually believe that the negative conditioning is an addiction that the human mind falls into. That's that 95-70 I was talking about. It's the clouds. They actually say that the number one thing that all human beings share on some level and on some form are the thoughts of I'm not good enough and bad. And that's the root of shame. And they actually have done research when it comes to the addictive population, but then they've discovered with everyone else that shame is the number one emotion that will trigger and maintain a relapse. Now, again, it's important to realize we're not talking about the addictions like sex, drugs, or work, though they are included. When it comes to mindfulness, we're talking about our addiction to believe the conditioned thoughts.
Okay. That's great. Thank you for that. Because I really do know that most of the people that I work with privately and also on Wednesday nights struggle a lot with that. And just being able to get over that hurdle, I think, is a big breakthrough. So
maybe I can offer this. It's something that I work with people, and it's kind of a template I've come up with. There's really only three types of thought. There is the conditioned thought. And there is what I call the creative or proactive thought. And then I use the term, you know, inspired thought. Now, the conditioned thought is all the thoughts that are not loving, supportive, not kind, not nurturing to yourself, and actually others and the world. That's that 95-70. That's mainly the clouds we're talking about. here's the tough thing for people to really understand. And if you're not at that place, that's fine too. You have no control over those thoughts coming up. You don't. Thought just shows up on its own accord. You don't wake up in the morning and say, at 9, 10 a.m., I'm going to have a negative thought. You wake up, move throughout the day, and a negative thought shows up. You have no control over it, no more than the waves in the ocean are going to stop. That's conditioned thought. Now, the creative, proactive thought, this is where you have 100% control. You have 100% control of how you respond and relate to that conditioned thought. And this is what I love about the mindful type of work. That's 100% responsibility on your part. How do you relate to that conditioned thought? Again, there's only two ways. You either relate to it kindly or with forms of fear and judgment. And the training is, again, relate to everything kindly, which I know is what Justine started with the question, and I will give you an exercise in somewhere during the course of the program to have an experience of it. Now, that last thought, which is really interesting, which is inspired thought, and this is the really fun thing when it comes to creativity that I know Justine has started talking about with her group. So you have conditioned thought you have no control over. Then you have proactive creative thought, which is your role, 100% responsibility to look at everything kindly. The more you do that, what happens is these other thoughts that are these ahas, these epiphanies, these creative insights happen more frequently. They're gifted to you. You only have to shoot for them. You know, when I work with the creative crowd, they work so hard for those inspired thoughts, and that itself causes stress. You don't need to work for them. Your only role, your only responsibility is that second thought, creative, proactive thought, to consistently, as much as possible, relate to every thought that comes up kindly.
Okay, so let me just understand this for everybody else out there too a little bit better. Are you saying that if we approach thoughts that come up with kindness, with loving kindness, that ultimately what's going to happen is the fear disappears and the creative mindset explodes?
It does.
Okay.
And, you know, one of the exercises that I will be giving you is based on metta, M-E-T-T-A, which actually means loving kindness in Pali. It's a offshoot of the Vipassana mindful meditation. And they actually use as their tagline is, it's the art of reteaching someone its goodness. It's the antidote to fear.
Okay, that's great. So prior to you coming today for the show, I heard from one of my clients who asked me a question that I wanted to pass on to you. He was having a panic attack, and he needed some help. You know, I talked to him briefly on a text message about breathing and getting out where he was. He was in his apartment. He was feeling closed in. He needed to get out. But he also wanted me to ask you for some added advice because he was going to call in and he didn't feel like he was capable of doing that.
Sure. Now, here's the thing, and I work with a lot of people with clinical panic disorders or panic attacks. I'll just cut to the chase. At the moment that they are occurring, there's not much you can do. However, part of the work is to do a form of a mindful exercise as an ongoing training. Because many people, as they do, really tell God something's about to happen. And it's really important to stay with the exercise as much as possible. And have a panic attack is coming to fruition. You do what you need to do to stay calm. And then the key is right when it ends, when you feel calm down, you need to go back to the exercise. You need to train your brain and your mind to do it before and right after, because then you can short circuit the intensity of the attack that is the exploding thing. But then, you know, Justine had talked about earlier before the conversation, which is absolutely true. Sometimes physical movement itself can dissipate some of the energy that the panic attack is trying to express.
And one more thing about that, since I suffered with panic attacks like 20 years ago, haven't had any recently at all. What I discovered myself was that if I kept talking to myself about the fact this was not real, it really helped me and breathe. To
sure.
Breathe. It really helped me to get to come out of it. So I just got a question from somebody who was in the audience. So the question is, can you look kindly at something even if you're angry with someone? How do you apply kindness to anger?
Oh, that's a great question. Okay.
A great audience member.
Yeah. I'll give you one short answer that most people don't like, and I said it because I didn't like it when I heard it. One of the things about meditation that's very formal, and it can specifically address something like this. One of the instructions is, the first is, you always say it as if you're offering a blessing to yourself and the other person. Second, and it's the important thing they talk about, even if you don't want to offer it because they're a pain in the ass, you do it anyway. Because the fact that someone is coming across angry to you, that's you having that thought. Because ultimately, we're only responding to our own thoughts about people. We're only responding to our reactions, not about the person. So when we do metta, you always come first. And to something like this, the prescription would be, may I have peace. May the person in front of me have peace. You don't need to say this to the person, because there's always that joke that you can do the forgiveness, but you don't need to do lunch. We're just trying to calm down the amygdala, that fun part of the brain, so it doesn't overload your system.
It's very funny about the lunch thing. I like that. So you don't have to hang out.
Exactly.
You just have to be loving and kind.
Yeah.
I get it. Okay.
Just like we don't do lunch. We just do these phone calls.
Right, exactly. That's all we do. But we used to have a lot of fun, Lee and I, when we interacted. Okay, so you have some more questions from the group on Wednesday night. So maybe we can go through a few of them.
Yeah, you know, this is a good one. I don't think a lot of teachers talk about this a lot when it comes to meditation. Helpful tips. And one of the most important tips is attitude going into meditation. And one of the attitudes they have is really check why you really want to do this. And this is a tricky one, because I know we want relief in the world. But this is where the grasping mind comes in. If you're doing this because you want relief, if you want to do this because you don't want to be fearful, in a way, that's a false motivation. It's not clean and pure. You will have the benefits, but it's going to be a little bit tougher. One of the instructions I have people is go in to meet the best of yourself and make it playful. Make it easy with an attitude of ease, an attitude of play like a child. Don't put much pressure on it, because this isn't something that's supposed to be such a struggle. It's you just spending time with you.
Okay. No, that's really great. You know, I was just thinking about, yes.
You know, and then I was going to offer three kind of things. I call them the three C's of attitudes to add. Curiosity, courage, and compassion. And here's the thing. If you go in with types of judgment or fear, you're going to trigger that amygdala track, and you're going to have a tougher time in the meditation. If you go in with curiosity, you don't trigger that, and you're going to be more open to just hearing what you need to hear. The other thing with courage and compassion, the way I set it up, they're just different sides of the same coin. Because with courage, you need to have the courage ultimately to look at what's in front of you. Look at what the mind's showing up. Look what is your conditioning. Because if you don't look, that ends up just being denial, and you suppress it, and you don't work through it. But you need to look. But here's the other side. If you can't bring compassion into the looking, you won't continue to look. You're going to give up. But again, we will learn through that one exercise really what compassion's about.
Okay, so I want to share with everybody my first time I ever meditated with you, which was, I think, 5 years ago. And Lee took me up to this house in the Hollywood Hills where there are a bunch of people who meditated all day long. And I actually fell asleep during the first time that I meditated, which, you know, wasn't a bad thing, because I was under a lot of stress in the middle of a very difficult situation, a lot of trauma. And so sleeping was actually a good thing for me. But one of the things that I believe this population has a difficult time with is when we try to take the time to meditate, we get concerned because we still have the thoughts that are running through our head. And I think one of the questions that I read from the group the other night is, what do you do about that? How do you handle that when you're trying to meditate and the thoughts are still running through your head?
Sure. And just so people understand, that happens even to seasoned meditators.
Like you?
Well, not even just me. You know, even the greats will tell you the moment they sit, mind is busy. And sometimes it never stops. But then they learned, as you learn to ground yourself in the breath, just to observe it without any judgment. Because remember, how you relate to what shows up determines what happens next. You either are bothered by your thoughts or you go, oh, that's interesting. Because the moment you're bothered by them, you actually stir them up more. You stir up the waters.
So you just kind of notice them. You don't engage with them.
No. Right. And, you know, one of the helpful things is when you learn to befriend the breath, which will be an exercise I'll show you, when your mind focuses on the breath, it will focus less on the thoughts because your mind can really only focus on one thing really well. And that's why we befriend the breath.
And that's one of the reasons that when I lay down at night, if I've had a stressful day and I've got a lot of thoughts that are running, if I do my deep breathing, I'll fall asleep because mm-hmm. the brain can't really engage in two things at one time.
Sure.
Okay, so why don't we do a couple of exercises?
Okay. I have a list of what would be the best to start with. Let me see. All right, the way I set it up is I'm going to give you one of the basic exercises that you will get at most retreats that start with the basics. And really, what it has you do is constantly follow the breath, but whenever a thought shows up, or even emotion, because ultimately emotion's thought, you're simply labeling thought. You're literally just using that word, thought. And then the instruction is you kindly go back to the breath. That's all you do. Now, I'm purposely going to do this one first, and then I will follow up with two kind of supportive ones that really enhance the practice. I do more of the attitude and also about compassion. So with this first exercise, you may get a baseline of what meditation would be like for you without really formal instruction. So what you do is each exercise the same way the body remembers. So what I do, because I learned it that way, is I always take three breaths, hold the last one, and then do the exercise. So before I do that with you, let me just offer this one instruction. For each inhale, just say to yourself, always with an attitude of kindness, whatever that is for you, following the inhale. And then on each exhale, following the exhale. That's all you're going to do. Whenever thought shows up, again with kindness, it's simply thought. And then you immediately go back to following the inhale, following the exhale. That's all you're going to do. So just get yourself comfortable. Close your eyes if you need to. Just get a sense of the body. And just consider whatever's going on for you right now is fine, even if the mind doesn't think it is. We'll start with three breaths. Take a deep breath in. Exhale, relax the body. Take a deep breath in. Exhale, relax the body. One more breath in, hold at the top. Exhale, relax the body. Now on your own, following your own rhythm, it's just following the inhale, following the exhale. and just labeling thought whenever a thought shows up. And this will be for about a minute. It's simply following the inhale, following the exhale, and labeling thought if you need to. Following the inhale, following the exhale. So that was about a minute.
It was great. The whole idea of when the thoughts come up,
mm-hmm.
of saying that word,
absolutely,
for me, really helps to just notice them, not engage, and get back to the following the inhale, following the exhale.
And that's a great point, because when they use labeling, you know, labeling is the culprit because mind labels, but in this exercise, you really label in a concrete way. Because what the mind does, it sees a thought, and then it has a conversation with thought. And then it gets caught in the whole emotion of thought, and we're gone. The game's over. But when we thought, and then go back to the breath, we're actually changing the programming. We're not indulging the thought. We're not indulging the story, and we're not getting caught up in it. So which kind of brings me to the next exercise. It's a very quick one. But on this one, I really want you to pay attention to what happens to the body when I give you adjustment. And I will tell you why I give this exercise after the fact, and actually how it's really relevant to our moment-to-moment life where we do informal meditation practice or mindful practice that is open-eyed, not sitting in a chair in the room in the dark. So again, we're just going to close our eyes. We're going to start with three breaths. And this time, you're just going to repeat the phrasing that I say to you in your mind. Again, it's just simply going to be following the inhale on the inhale, following the exhale on the exhale. So just get comfortable again. Close your eyes. And take a deep breath in. Exhale, relax the body. Take a deep breath in. Exhale, relax the body. One more breath in, hold at the top. Exhale, relax the body. Again, on each inhale, following the inhale, and really hug that breath and that phrasing together. Following the exhale. You can label if you need to, like the last exercise. Following the inhale. Following the exhale. Now in a minute, I'm going to give you an adjustment and really pay attention to what happens to the body when I have you change one of the phrasing. So on the inhale, you're going to stay with following the inhale. But now on the exhale, I want you to say smiling through the exhale. Following the inhale. Smiling through the exhale. Just notice what happens to the body if anything happens. If it doesn't, that's fine too. Following the inhale, smiling through the exhale. And then whenever you're ready, you can open your eyes.
I can tell you what happened to me.
Sure. I don't care, but go for it.
I know you don't. I got really happy.
Yeah.
I mean, I felt really happy. It's very interesting.
So this is the reason I give this. Now, it's not mine. I will give it to Thich Nhat Hanh, one of the big Vietnamese Buddhist monks, probably the biggest one out there. It's his kind of trademark exercise. Meditation or mindful meditation has at one of their precepts that the return back to the breath after we recognize we've been distracted, and we all get distracted, we always will get distracted at one point, but when we recognize we were distracted and we choose to go back to the breath, they call that the return. That is one of the most important parts of meditation where you need to celebrate it because you chose differently. We know we got caught up maybe in negativity or we got caught up in the anger, but then we chose and went back to the breath. You know, that's a real full responsibility. I chose to go back. I didn't choose to get caught up and engage in old behavior. And you really want to celebrate that moment in meditation because when you begin meditation and many years afterwards, really they say the practice is about begin again and again and again, because we're always going to get distracted. But then how do you greet the distraction? You notice it kindly and purposely and consciously choose to go back to the breath. Full celebration because you chose differently.
That's great. So I just wanted to mention, any of you that are listening, you absolutely can call in, and the number is area code 917-889-7025. We'd love to hear from you if you have any questions for myself or for Lee. And so what I thought is we might continue a little bit with some of the questions that I gave you from from the group. Oh, hold on. I've got another question from the audience. I have heard that the Buddhists say that we should always thank, appreciate, and learn from obstacles, problems that we have in our life. Mm-hmm. Can you explain that concept?
Sure.
That's a great question.
That's a question I think everyone has asked one of their teachers. And many times when you go to retreats, they'll actually call the instruction an interview, where you sit for a long period of time and you get to ask them usually one question, if it's a private type of thing, and then they get a short reply back and they go, now meditate. There's no conversation sometimes. And often the joke that they'll say, I don't understand, what problem? Because to them, there's no problem. Because it's the mind that says it's a problem.
Right.
And really, that's the only kind of answer I can give, because the more you do the practice, you recognize what's happening to you is happening. That's reality. But the moment you argue with reality, we suffer.
Hmm.
You know, there's Byron Katie, which is someone who lives this life, has used a joke that, you know, arguing with reality is like this. You try to teach a cat to bark, and you can try and try and try, but at the end of the day, it's going to look up at you and go, meow. You know, we struggle with things that we can't change. That's reality. But the moment you can accept it, then you have the power to see what are the options for you.
And also, I understand that what the Buddhists say about, you know, tragedy or drama or any kind of situation, negative situation that comes up can be a benefit because there's growth.
Absolutely.
Through that.
You know, one of my favorite stories, I can't recall who, I think maybe in Jack Canfield, who's talked about this story, that a lot of meditation, you know, therapy, the way we need to handle life. He talks about a story where there's a little boy who's trying to learn to hold a cardbox container of milk. And he would see his mother hold it with one hand. He can barely hold it with two. And he's determined to hold it with one hand. And as he holds it with one hand, it falls on the floor and milk goes everywhere. And as he tells the story, he said the mother looked at the child, and it's what human beings, the origins of shame. She saw his face and he was terrified. And she went over to him and says, well, now that you made a mess, you know, you want to play with it and clean it up? And really, that's kind of the attitude with, you know, mindful meditation and, I believe, life. If you learn to be curious, that's that concept of if you're curious in the problem, the solution's there. And sometimes the first part of the solution is you change your attitude with it.
That's great. And attitude is a big part of the whole process of getting healthy, too. Because we have a positive attitude, which at times for some of us we're at today. That could be something that can really help us turn a lot of things around. So we've got
questions.
We've got questions. Yes, we do.